Now we're holding on Kuf Dalet Amud Aleph, the eighth line. The Mishnah had said, Lo yitin loy livnoy v'loy l'shluchay. The Mishnah had described a case where a person stole money and then swore falsely that he doesn't own it. Later on, when he admits it and does tshuva and he wants to bring his korban, he wants to bring his korban asham, where first he has to pay the keren v'chomesh to the person he stole it from. So the Mishnah said, Lo yitin loy livnoy v'loy l'shluchay. He can't give the money to the nigzol's son or his shliach. He has to give it to him directly. So Itmar, the Gemara says, we have a discussion of Amiroyim on that point. Shliach shasoy be'edim. Suppose that a person, in general, not talking specifically about Gzela yet, but in general, a person appointed a shliach in front of Eden. So Rashi describes, for example, that that Shimon owes Reuven money, and Reuven now, so Reuven now appointed a shliach to collect the money from Shimon. So Rav Chista Omer have a shliach, Rabba Omer loy have a shliach. Rav Chista says that is a valid shliach, and Rabba says not. A valid shliach, meaning Rashi says that way. So if Reuven's shliach comes to Shimon and collects the money, so now at that point Shimon is potter from paying again because it was a valid shliach and he gave the money to Reuven's shliach, and that's that. On the other hand, so that's Rav Chista. Rabba is saying no, it's not a valid shliach, meaning that Shimon is going to be on the hook to pay for it again. Now Rashi just says that we're talking about over here that he appointed him with Edim, and he the Gemara is saying he appointed him with Edim and sent him. Tosfos teaches out according to Rashi that it has to be. That if Reuven had directly told Shimon, if Reuven had told Shimon, send it through this guy, then of course he's a shliach, because as the Gemara is going to quote soon, a case where he says, send it to me with Pliny, and that's considered a valid shlichus. So according to Rashi, it would come out that he didn't actually tell him, send it to me through him. There are edim that he's a shliach, but there's no actual instructions to send it through him. And therefore, that's a Rashi. So Tosfos explains that's how Rashi would understand the machlokas of whether if he gives it through that person, it's valid or not. Tosfos himself disagrees with that because he says it doesn't fit with the continuation of the Gemara. And so he says, no matter what, always shaloi b'fanav, it's no good whether there was actual instructions to send it, whether the shliach comes saying that he gave instructions to send it through me or not. It would have, in order for him to be potter, according to everybody, it would have to be that Reuven actually told Shimon to his face, send me with Pliny, send the money with Pliny. So in other words, if Reuven had previously told Shimon, tomorrow I'm going to be sending in person, tomorrow I'm going to be sending Levi to collect the debt from you, give it to him, then there's no question that would be valid. But although we're going to discuss in the Gemara later on about other possibilities of that, or there possibilities that maybe after all, even in that case, not. But right now, at least we're saying that for sure would be good. The question would be over here if he appointed him with Edim. So again, according to Rashi, the vote is he appointed him with Edim and instructions that say give it through him, whereas according to Tosfos, it doesn't matter whether he had said that or not. So we have sort of Chista versus Rabba. And the Gemara teaches out the reason behind the machlokas. Rav Chista o mahavi shliach. Rav Chista says it is a valid shliach, because he says lahochi tauchi va'okma be'edim. After all, we can say, why did he go to the trouble of appointing the shliach in front of edim? Because he wants that the money should be able to be in his rishus, meaning, in other words, that therefore, so he's saying that so Rav Chista Amar have a shliach, he wants that this way the money should be considered in his rishus. He went to the trouble of not just appointing a shliach, where they there you could say, okay, well, how do I know he's a shliach? I have edim to show that he's my shliach. So therefore, so I did that specifically because I want you to be comfortable sending the money with him and saying that, and know that you're going to be potter from having to pay further on. So therefore, so that's why Rav Chista is saying it's a valid shliach. Rabba omer loy have a shliach. Hochikomer, Rabba says no. It still doesn't make him necessarily a shliach in the sense that if he gives him the money and then there's an onus on the way that he should be potter. Because Hochikomer, you can say the one who sent the shliach, the mishaleach, would say inish. The reason why I appointed him in front of Edim, inish mehemnehu. You should know he's a trustworthy person. Is samchas. If you want to rely on him, smoich. Then you can rely on him and go ahead and send the money with him. So. But not necessarily saying that if there was an onus on the way, that you should be potter. The fact is, until the money reaches me, you can't really say that. Tosfos points out, by the way, that even if Shimon himself had brought the money, and he's traveling on a road where there's sakana, then there would be a certain degree of pshia over there, and he would be chayev. He'd have to make sure to give it to him in the city, or to give it in a way, or to tell Reuven, since there's a journey involved, and there's hazards on the way, and there might be an onus, and I don't want to be on the hook for it, then I'm going to wait to pay you until you come, or something to that effect. So therefore, in the same vein over here, when he's sending it with a shliach, Rabba is saying, nevertheless, that's not enough to patter him from. It's not enough to patter him from paying. If there was an onus. So you want to send it with him because don't hate. But Reuven is saying, according to Rabba, be aware though, and you should know he is trustworthy. There's no problem of giving it to him that he might keep it for himself or something. I appointed him in the presence of Edim, and I know that I can rely on him. But nevertheless, there still is the factor of pshia involved if there is an onus on the way, and therefore in that sense you're not guaranteed against that. So you'll have to decide you'll have to decide yourself what you want to do at that point. So that's the machlokas. So the Gemara says Tanan. Now let's see. We learn in a Mishnah in Bava Metzia. Hashoyel asapora, if a person borrows a cow, v'shulcha biyad b'noi, and the owner of the cow sends it with his son, biyad avdo, biyad shluchoy, with his eved or with his shliach, with his own son or eved or shliach, oi biyad b'noi, biyad avdo, biyad shluchoy, shal shoyel, or he sends it with the son or the eved or the shliach of the shoyel, umesa, and it died on the way, potter. Then the shoyel is potter. Now, of course, a shoyel is chayev even for onsin. So when we say potter, amounts to saying that it's not yet in his reshus for him to be chayev according to the dinim of shoyel. So we have to ask, hay shloche hay chidomi. So what's the scenario with this shliach? Idolei osa be'edim. If we're talking about that he didn't appoint the shliach in front of edim, well, of course, minoya didn't. How would we even know that he's a shliach? If the Mishnah is calling him shluchai, implies that we know for a fact that he's a shliach, and without edim, how exactly would we know that? Tosfos explains the question differently. Why would the mashil even give the cow to the person if he doesn't know for sure whether he's legitimately his shliach? Obviously, Ella da also edim. Obviously, we have to be talking about that the shoyel actually appointed the shliach in the presence of edim. Vikatoni, and still the Mishnah is saying de potter, that he will be potter if the animal dies on the way because it's not yet in his reshus. I skipped a line before, by the way, in Rabba's statement. We were saying, Hachakama, Inish Mehemno, he's a reliable person. If you want to rely on him, rely on him. And if you want to send it in his hands, then send it in his hands. So, okay, so now we're saying, though, that in the case of the Shoyel, we're saying, on the face of it, we're saying that even though it is apparently a Shliach that was appointed with Edim, nevertheless, we're still saying that it's not yet in his Rishus. So, Vikatoni de Potter, and the Mishnah is saying that he's Potter, Kashalot of Chista. So the question is on Rav Chista then. Rav Chista is saying that just the fact that you appointed him with Edim makes him a shliach. You don't need anything else. You don't need, as Tosfos said, explain Rashi to actually say, send it with him. You don't need, according to Tosfos, to actually personally tell him that point. And we're still saying, either way, we're saying that he's not considered his shliach. And therefore, if he gives the animal to him, or he's considered a shliach to the extent that, like Rabba said, he says he's a trustworthy guy. You want to send the animal with him, gezunt to hate. But nevertheless, it's not considered. We don't say in this shlucha shaladim kamoisei, and to say that as soon as the shliach received the animal, then it's considered already as though it's in the shoyl's possession. Apparently, the Mishnah is not saying we don't say that. So then it's a contradiction on Rav Chista. And the answer is, k'da'omer Rav Chista b'schiro l'kitoi. The answer is, just like Rav Chista says, in connection with later on, the Gemara is going to point out that Rav Chista gives this answer in connection with our Mishnah, which now we're bringing this in because this is going to be relevant to our Mishnah about the case of the Gazlan giving the money to Shluchai. We're going to have the same machlokas if it was a Shliach that was appointed Be'edim. So just like Rav Chista explains in connection with our Mishnah, that we're not talking about a regular shliach, we're talking about b'schiroi or l'kitoi. We're talking about his hired worker or his l'kitoi. Rashi gives two explanations. L'kitoi, number one, means a housemate. So l'kitoi, as in he gathered in this guy, and now he's living with him and keeping him company. And the second explanation, elsewhere, Rashi explains that Lakito. Rashi explains that a second explanation is so that Lakito would be somebody who he hires to harvest and gather in his grain. So in other words, Schiroi. So Rashi explains Lakito would be, according to the first explanation, which is from Rashi's Rebbeim, means his housemate. And Schiroi then would be somebody who he hired for a period of time, a day, a week, or whatever. And Rashi's second explanation is schira, it means one that you hired for other kinds of jobs, and lakito would be like a seasonal worker that you hire him only for the season to harvest the grain. The point being, in other words, in both those cases, there was no actual appointment with Edim or something like that. It's just that the mashal knows. He says, "I know this guy. I know you. You're Pliny's housemate or you're Pliny's worker or whatever. So sure, I'll send the animal with you." Nonetheless, though, the fact is that the shoyl did not actually appoint the schiroi l'kitoi as a shliach, and therefore we can say that that he's potter. Therefore, we can say that the animal is not yet in the possession of the shoyl or of the shliach when it dies, and therefore he's potter. Not to say, though, Rav Chista would say, if he actually appointed him a shliach with Edim, then not necessarily would the din of the Mishnah apply, because then we would say, as we said before, that he would say, "I appointed him with Edim Davka in order that he should be considered my shliach." And therefore, it will be in my reshus. And in that case, the result is, if it was that kind of shliach, then the shoyl would be chayev if the animal dies on the way. So no contradiction on Rav Chista. So hochanami b'schiru l'kitoi. So the same way as Rav Chista explains that in the case of our Mishnah, the same way he's going to explain the case in Bava Metzia as being just that. We're sort of talking about that he never actually appointed him a shliach. He just this is a person where we know that he's a hired worker or a housemate or whatever of the shoyl. Okay, the Gemara says Tanan. Let's look at our Mishnah then. Our Mishnah had said, "Lo yitin, lo levnoi, v'lo leshlochoi." Tosfos, by the way, wonders about the order of things in the Gemara over here. Why is the Gemara first presenting the question from Bava Metzia and only then from our Mishnah? And why is it saying? And why is it saying that Rav Chista had originally given his explanation on the Mishnah in Bava Metzia rather than Bava Kama comes before Bava Metzia? You would think that Rav Chista should have given his explanation on our Mishnah, and the Gemara should have brought our Mishnah in first to ask on Rav Chista. Anyway, Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, lo yitin lo levnoi v'lo l'shluchai. We said in our Mishnah that the Gazlan is not yotze the mitzvah beheshev es hagzela and able to bring his korban asham. He can't give it, we said, to his son or to his shliach. So So again, we have to ask, Hai shluchei hefidomi. What is the scenario with the shliach? Idolay asoy be'edim. Again, if he had not appointed him with edim, minoyadin, and how would we even know that he's a shliach, according to Rashi, or according to Tosfos, how would the gazlan even rely on giving the money to him in order for it to be brought to the nigzol, when he doesn't even know if this is the nigzol shliach or not? You could just have a guy coming and saying, I'm his shliach, without any evidence at all, and you're not going to give him, you're not going to give him money on his own say-so. So elolav da'asoy be'edim. Evidently, it must mean that he appointed him with edim. And if he appointed, and still, the Mishnah is saying that you can't send it with such a shliach. So that would imply, not like Rav Chista, because Rav Chista would be saying, once you appointed the shliach be'edim, then he's considered a full-fledged shliach, and anything that you give to him is considered like you gave to the Meshalech. So the answer is, Tirgum Rav Chista b'schiru l'kita. Again, Rav Chista explained that our Mishnah is also talking about, when we say l'shluchoy, we mean schiru l'kita. We don't mean that he actually appointed him a shliach. We mean that he's known to be this guy's partner, or his housemate, or his whatever, his hired worker, but not that he actually, but not that the mishaleach, not that the nigzal actually appointed him. Well, the Gemara says, "Abel shliach shasoy be'edim mai." So, what are you going to tell me then? If he did actually appoint him in the presence of edim, then what are you going to say? Hochinami to have a shliach? You're going to say then he is considered a valid shliach, and then the gazlan can be yotze v'heishiv es agzela by giving it to him. Well, ad the tani sefer abel noisin or the shliach beistin. Well, then in that case, why does the sefer of the Mishnah continue and say that he could give the money to a shliach beistin? If you're telling me that it's possible to have a shliach that you can return to, now like this, in other words, the Mishnah seems to be saying there's no way to have a shliach appointed by the nigzol that the gazlan can accomplish v'heishiv es agzela by returning it to him. The only way is going to be by a shliach beistin. But if that's the case, if according to Rav Chista, it's enough to have the nigzol appoint the shliach be'edim, and the case of the Mishnah saying that he can't return it with him is talking about a shliach who wasn't appointed with edim at all, but rather schiro lakitoi, where we know that he's his messenger, but he never actually appointed him officially as such. Well, lifli v'lisni b'didei. Then why did the Mishnah make a distinction within that itself? Shliach shasoy be'edim. And the Mishnah should have said that if he appoints him with edim, then he is a valid shliach. Instead of saying the distinction is a shliach you can't give to, but a shliach based in you could. Instead, the Mishnah should have said that a shliach without edim, such as schiro lakito, you can't give, but a shliach with edim you could, because he'd be considered a valid shliach. In fact, a goes abach makes that more clear in the Lashon of the Gemara. The Mishnah should have said, when are we talking about a shliach that he didn't appoint with edim? But if it was a shliach who he made with edim, then it would be valid and he could return it with him. And in fact, the Rashba points out, there would be a very logical reason for the Mishnah to make that distinction. Because after all, a beis din is harder to get than edim. First of all, you need three for a beis din. You need only two edim. Second of all, everybody, almost anybody can be an aide. Not very many people are qualified to be on a beis din. So then the Mishnah should have, instead of the Mishnah saying, in other words, that there's a more difficult case to find where you could have a shliach that you give to, namely, you have to have a shliach that was appointed by beis din. Instead, you could have a shliach that was appointed by the nigzol in the presence of edim. And according to Rav Chista, that's considered a perfectly good shliach. So why does the Mishnah not mention that? And the answer is Amri. The answer is, they say, to answer Rav Chista, loy psikoloi, because the Tana couldn't do that because it's not a definitive thing. Shliach based in loy shnoa, so in nigzol, v'loy shnoa, so in gazlan have a shliach. Therefore, psikoloi, because when it comes to a shliach based in, it doesn't matter who appointed that shliach based in. It doesn't matter whether it's the gazlan went to based in and said, look, I stole from this guy and I swore falsely, etc., and now I want to do tshuva. But the guy is far away, and it would be dangerous to travel over there, or as we learned yesterday, the expenses of traveling there are going to be greater than the amount that I owe. So therefore, let me make you based in the shluchim, or let you based in appoint a shliach in my presence, and he'll have the job of accepting the money and bringing it to the nigzol, or whether the nigzol makes the shliach. Either way, a shliach based in is a shliach based in, and that's valid. Therefore, psikalei, therefore the Tana can say it as a definitive fact that a shliach based in, you're always yotze. Based on, now we talked about yesterday, how much of that is a takonas hachamim to make, because of takonas hashavim, to make it easier for him to do tshuva, and how much of it is, and how we did mention in the Gemara yesterday, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon had mentioned, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik had said about takonah gedolah, his skin of a great takana, that if the expenses of bringing it there was going to be greater than the actual amount to pay, then you bring it to Beis Din. So we discussed there is that, there is also, there can also be cases where even on a daraisa level it would be valid to bring it to him. Tosfos in fact pointed out over there, referred to our Gemara, and said that and said that it's not completely takanas hashavim. To a certain extent there is it is even daraisa. What we're saying is that as far as achrayus haderech, once he gives it to the shliach beis din, then that's good enough, and he has his kapara. He doesn't have to wait until it reaches the nigzol. The takana is something else. The takana is saying that he can give it to, that he can actually just deposit it with a local beis din. In other words, the din daraisa would be you give it to a shliach beis din, and then at that point you're not worried about what's going to happen on the road. And the takana would be you don't even need that. You can just give it. You can just deposit it with the beis din. That's how Tosfos learns. Anyway, the point is that Rav Chista is going to explain that again, shliach beis din, no matter what, whether the nigzol or the gazlan is the one who had beis din appoint him, either way, that's going to work. On the other hand, shliach sha'asoy be'edim, when it comes to a shliach who was appointed by edim, to ki asoy nigzol who to have a shliach, asoy gazlan, they have a shliach, there, it only works if the nigzol appointed him a shliach. It doesn't work if the gazlan appointed the shliach, because why should it? Why should the gazlan be able to appoint the shliach and get away with it? The fact is, he hasn't yet done v'heshev esagzeva. So yeah, and he doesn't have his kapara yet. He can't bring his asham yet. Therefore, loy psikalei, therefore the Tana couldn't say it as a definitive thing that a shliach that was appointed by Edim is going to be good, because it's going to depend who appointed the shliach. So Rav Chista, in other words, is going to say that the Mishnah doesn't mention the concept of shliach sha'asoy be'edim, because that would make the Mishnah too woody. You would have to explain that it means where the nigzol made him be'edim. But the Mishnah can mention shliach beis din, because there's no difference over there whether the gazlan or the nigzol appointed him, and therefore the Mishnah can say that a shliach beis din is good, but not to imply that a shliach with edim would also not be good. However, it has to be a shliach that was appointed with edim by the nigzol. That's how Rav Chista would learn. Again, according to Rabbah, the whole thing is more straightforward. According to Rabbah, we would just say that a shliach appointed with edim is never good enough unless you have actual instructions to send the money with him, and here you don't have that. Okay, in which case, the Gemara points out, ula puki mehai tana. In which case, if we understand the Mishnah this way, then the Tana of the Mishnah is coming to exclude the opinion, is coming to show that he disagrees with the opinion of the following Tanya, the Tanya of Shimon Elazar, shliach based in shasoy nigzol v'loyasoy gazlan. If the shliach based in was appointed by the nigzol but not by the gazlan, oy asoy gazlan v'sholach halah v'notel shloimi yadoy, or that the gazlan appointed the shliach based in and then the nigzol sent another shliach. So now each of them has a shliach. In other words, so now you have the gazlan Ruvain went to based in and had them appoint the shliach, and then Shimon, the nigzol, went and appointed his own shliach, and the notel shaloi miyodoi, and the shliach of the nigzol went and collected the money from the shliach of the gazlan potter. Then at that point, the gazlan would be potter. So we see Rav Shimon Elazar is saying that it has to be that the gazlan, it has to be that the nigzol makes the shliach beis din. He's saying clearly only if the shliach beis din was made a shliach by the nigzol. Actually what it is he's saying that if the gazlan makes the shliach beis din, it's only going to work only when the money reaches the shliach of the nigzol. So in other words, we would say if the gazlan appointed a shliach based in and he gave it to uh, and the shliach based in himself, before he had a chance to bring the money to the nigzel, it was lost or stolen or whatever, there was some kind of onus, then we would say, the gaz, Rav Shimon Elazar would say, the gazlan has still not been yotze, because it didn't reach the nigzel or his shliach. Only if the only once it reached the nigzel or his shliach, then that would be good. So now on Mishnah, the way that Rav Chista is understanding it is coming to tell us not that. That the Mishnah is saying it doesn't matter who appointed the shliach beis din. Once the money reaches the shliach beis din, then he's good, and then he's potter. And then the Rosh explains, actually, first of all, the Rosh wonders a little bit. He says, what's the chiddush? Obviously, once it comes to once the nigzel shliach has the money, especially appointed of chista, that's enough to appoint the shliach be'edim, then he should be potter. But the Rosh further points out that when you give it to the fact is if you give it to a shliach of the nigzel, if the nigzel doesn't appoint didn't actually appoint that shliach, then how is it going to work? How is there a kapara? So he explains that shliach based in means, in other words, the nigzel appointed the shliach based in the shliach in front of based in. So and the question is that appointed of chista, why does he need to do that when he could have just done it in front of Aden? But now we're saying, in other words, that the Mishnah is telling us that it disagrees with Rav Shimon Elazar and says that you don't need that. As long as he appointed the shliach with Edim, then that will be good enough, and it doesn't have to be appointed in front of Beis Din. Okay, the Gemara continues. Rab Yochanan and Rab Elazar. So we have this machloikas of Rav Chista and Rabba about a shliach shasoy be'edim. So now the Gemara brings other opinions on the subject. Rab Yochanan and Rab Elazar, the Amitavayu, both Rab Yochanan and Rab Elazar say, shliach shasoy be'edim have a shliach. When you appoint a shliach with Edim, it is a valid shliach, meaning, in other words, like Rav Chista had said, once the shliach receives the money, then you the loiva or the gazlan or whatever it is are potter, and you don't need to worry about it any further. And the flip side of it is, as far as what we said before, as far as a shoyo, that if you appoint a shliach be'edim, then as soon as the animal or whatever it is that you're borrowing reaches your shliach, then you're going to be chayev in all the things that a shoyo was chayev in. And Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar say, "V'im Toma Mishnah Seinu." You're going to ask, "What about our Mishnah?" As in fact, we asked on our Mishnah, we asked on Rav Chista from our Mishnah before, that our Mishnah seems to be saying that you can't send it with a shliach. So before, Rav Chista had given an answer that the shliach of our Mishnah is schiro lakita, is somebody who was never appointed officially as a shliach in the first place. It's just somebody who you know has a close connection with this guy as his hired worker or his housemate or whatever. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar give a different answer. The answer is b'mamtzi lo shliach. We're talking about where he makes a shliach, where he makes a shliach available to him. So he did appoint him with Edim. De'omalei isli zuzi gabi planya. Namely, that the nigzel says to the shliach, "Look, I have money that Ploni owes me because he stole from me previously. V'loy kama shadr lahu, and he's not sending them because he's concerned about what might happen on the way, that he doesn't want to be on the hook for it again. So I want you, ischazile, go appear in front of him, go meet up with him." So I don't know, he's not sending. I don't know why he's not sending yet. I know he wants to do tshuva, but I don't know yet why he's not sending. So you go and show yourself to him. You go and appear in front of him and find out. Maybe Poshut couldn't find somebody to send the money with. And now when you tell him, "I'm available to send it," then he'll say, "Good, then I'll send it with you." But therefore, we're talking about that he didn't actually appoint him, or he didn't actually appoint him a shliach in front of Edim. Inami kider Rav Chista b'schiro l'kitay. Or we could explain the way Rav Chista did, that we're talking about schiro l'kitay. Either way, in other words, we are talking about, say, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, that we're not talking about a shliach who was appointed in the presence of Edim, because if it was appointed in the presence of Edim, then it would, in fact, be valid for the gazlan to send the money through such a shliach, and he would be potter. And at that point, we would say that he has his kapara. And now he can bring his asham. So because Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar are agreeing with Rabbi Chista on that point, and they're saying that you can't that the Mishnah is not a contradiction to that again, because either it's talking about Schiro Lekitoi, or because we're talking about another case where again he didn't actually say to him in so many words in front of Edim, you be my shliach. He's just telling him, you go and meet up with the guy and find out whether he's willing to send the money with you. Okay. Talking further about sending money with a shliach, the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Ein Meshtalchin Mois B'diyukni. You don't have to send money where a shliach comes with a diyukni. A diyukni, Rashi explains, is that the for example, let's say with a pekodin, the owner of the money sent simonim, or for example, he signed a piece of paper and told him that you're going to be my shliach to go collect the money. Now there is something called a hashah, which we learned about earlier in the Masechta. We learned on Daf Ayin about the concept of a hashah, which is that he can write out an official document that says that I'm appointing you not more than my shliach. I'm making that this money actually belongs to you. He tells him, "Dun schei la'atzmacha, go take the guy to Beis Din if necessary and collect the money, and it'll be yours." And that gives him the right to do that. That's like a power of attorney. And then based on that, he has the right to now that he's considered the actual owner of the money, then of course he can go and collect and go to Beis Din and do everything else that's possible. Here we're talking about there's not an actual hashah. Here we're talking about he just gave him a piece of paper with a signature or a stamp or something that says go to Pliny and have him give me this money to you. The word diukni itself we find in a number of places in Midrashim. It means an image actually. Sometimes in particular, it talks about that a person, for example, a human being, is the diyukan, is the image of Hashem, because a person is created with Selam Elokim. Basically, though, the basic meaning is, the Rosh explains that the basic meaning of diukni is an image, and because the human form is the highest possible image that exists in our world, therefore the Midrashim and Gemara sometimes use the word diukni to mean a human form. The Kruvim, that doesn't say the word diukni by them, as far as I know, but whatever. Yeah. The Rabbeinu Chananel also in Shittim Ukubetzis brings a different meaning of it. That the word diukni, the word diu, means true. So it means like a mutual secret, like some secret that only the two of them know. So now a person comes. So again, Ruvain, let's say, previously deposited money by Shimon. Now he's sending Levi together with a diukni to say, go pick up the pekodin from Shimon. So we're saying that Shimon is not obligated to give the money to this shliach, ba'afilo edim chasumim aleo, even if there were edim signed below the signature or below the stamp. The reason is because basically the problem is he still has a chrayus on it. Since this guy was not appointed a shliach bifnei edim, then therefore, if he sends the money with him, very well, he can trust that this guy was sent by Reuven. But what happens if there's an onus on the way? Reuven's going to say, I never received the money. Then Shimon is going to be on the hook to pay it all over again. And he doesn't want to do that. Therefore, he doesn't send the money with this person who's carrying the due. So Tosfos discusses a couple of possibilities over here. Now again, diukni means an image or a stamp or a seal or something like that. Something where we know he's been sent by a certain person, but nevertheless, there's no actual instructions. In so many words saying that he's appointed, right? So even if there's edim certifying that this is his diukni, so in other words, Tosfos first mentions that we're talking about. So Reuven told a sofer, write out a document that says to Pliny, that says to Shimon, he should send the money through Levi and sign with his stamp. Then even if there are edim on it. If Tosfos explains, edim chasumim aleha means that the edim are certifying that this is in fact Reuven's stamp. So they're not certifying the actual instructions that Reuven gives. They're not saying in our presence Reuven gave these instructions. They're just saying we recognize that this is Reuven's stamp. So that's not good enough. Tosva says, if the document, if they sign on the actual statement in the document, then yeah, sure, that would be different. Then he would be a valid shliach, because we said before he was appointed a shliach by Aiden. And again, Tosfos also says that based on what they had said on Omer Aleph, that even with all of that, if he didn't actually tell him in person, give me the money through Pliny, then not necessarily, then still he's going to have the problem of Achrayus, and therefore he's entitled to say, I'm not going to send it. So that was Rabbi Yehuda said that in the name of Shmuel. Rabbi Yochanan says no. Im Edim Chasumim Alea. If Edim are signed, then at Meshalchin, then you do have to send them, because now at that point he's Potter from Achrayus. Because again, for the same reason as we said on Omer Aleph, because he went to the trouble of appointing these Edim, appointing the Shliach in the presence of Edim. So that's good enough. That means he's his actual shliach, shlucha shalom kamoisei. And now at that point, if the money reaches him, then it's considered as though it reached the mishaleach, and therefore Shimon will be potter. Shimon, the shomer or whatever he was, will be potter from Achrayus, and therefore there's no reason that he shouldn't send it.
Escort without him being.
So Rabbi Yochanan is saying, as long as there are edim that are signed on it, then that's good enough. Not like Shmuel says. So Tosfos points out, in fact, you don't even need a diukni. We said before that shliach shasoy be'edim is good enough. The chiddush is, we were saying that if there's a diukni without edim, then it won't be effective. I may recognize it as Pliny's signature or a stamp or whatever, but nevertheless, I still have the problem of achrayus, and therefore I'm entitled to say I'm not going to return it just on the basis of this diukni, unless you come and show me evidence of edim that you've actually been appointed of a shliach.
Signature, there's no
doubt. Essentially, that's kind of what it comes down to. So Tosfos, by the way, mentions over here that was given that we have that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar apparently both agree with. Now, usually we have the halacha is like Shmuel and Dinim Ominous, Tosfos points out when we have Rav versus Rabbi Yochanan, usually the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, and Rav is a. So Tosfos says in that case the same rule would apply when you have Shmuel against Rabbi Yochanan. The halacha would have to be like Rabbi Yochanan, especially over here. Tosfos says the halacha must end up being like Rav Chista in the original Machlokas, not like Rabbah, because both Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar agree with Rav Chista, and because just like Rabbi Yochanan outranks Rab as far as the halacha being like him, so also he must outrank Shmuel in the halacha being like him. So therefore the halacha would end up being that as long as he was appointed with Edim, then that would be valid. On the other hand, other Rishonim learn that the halacha is like Shmuel. The halacha usually is like Shmuel and Dinim Ominous, that says that no, in that case not. When there's a diukni over there and there are edim, that's not necessarily good enough. You would have to have, as Tosfos says, either they actually signed off on the actual statement to give him the money, not just that they're signing off that the diukni itself is valid, that the diukni itself is genuine, or as the Gemara is going to point out, you have to have other. According to Shmuel, you're going to have other ways of accomplishing the matter. So the Gemara says, Amri. So they ask the Shmuel, my takanta. Well, according to Shmuel, how do you correct the situation given that? So if you're out of town. And according to Shmuel, it's not good enough to send a shliach even with a diukni, and even with edim, and even with all of that. So how is a person supposed to get his pikadon if he's out of town? According to Rashi and according to one explanation of Tosfos, what we're saying is that, yeah, you could appoint the shliach in front of Edim, and that'll work, because we said Rav Chista holds, and Shmuel evidently agrees with that, that as long as you appointed the shliach in front of Edim, then you're good. The Gemara wants to give an answer that will work even if the mishaleach passes away beforehand, and therefore the Gemara is going to ask how you're going to accomplish that. There's other explanations as well. First of all, according to the second explanation in Tosfos, we're saying that as long as you didn't tell him in person previously, send me the money through Pliny, then it's not going to work. So the question is, now what if you don't have the opportunity to? You're out of town and you don't have the opportunity to tell him in person. So how are you going to do it in a way where the guy is going to be able to send it and know that he's potter? The Pnei Yeshua talks about another possibility as well, that the Gemara may also be factoring into the in the consideration that after all, the Mshaleach could always be Mevatel, the Shliach. He could say, for example, that that this guy is not my Shliach anymore, and then it's going to turn out you gave him the money, and it turns out by that time he wasn't the Shliach anymore. So the Gemara is looking for a way that you can be guaranteed that you can give the money and not have to worry about any of those considerations. And the Gemara answers, Kiha, as we have the following case. Dirab Abba have a Masik Zuzi b'dirab Yosef Bachom. Rab Abba was owed money by Rab Yosef Bar Chama. Rab Yosef Bar Chama is the father of Rab. So he owed Rab Abba money. Omalei, Rab Safra. So Rab Abba tells Rab Safra, who's going to be traveling to Rab Yosef Bar Chama's area. This is not, by the way, Rab Yosef Bar Chama is not Rab Yosef Bar Chama is not the regular Rab Yosef in Shas, who was Rav's Rebbe. This is Rav's father. Anyway, so Rab Abba says to Rab Safra, Bahadi de Osis, while you're traveling to where Rab Yosef Bachama lives, I sinu niali, go bring the money that that Rab Yosef Bachama owes me, bring it along with me. So he's making Rab Safra his shliach. Ki ozol lahosam. So when Rab Safra goes, so maybe there was a, so wait. So ki ozol lahosam, omale rova brei. So Rab Safra comes and says, Rab Abba sent me to get the money. Rava, Rab Yosef's son, asks him, this is a regular Rab Yosef and Shas, me kosev lachis kabalti, in this document that Rab Abba wrote to give to Rab Safra, did he say in there the word hiskabalti, that when Rab Safra gets the money, it's considered that I myself have received it? And then that way you'll be potter from achrayus in case it gets stolen or whatever on the way before Rab Safra has a chance to bring it to Rab Abba. Rab Yosef Bar Chama says no. So Rav says yihachi. Well, then we have a problem over here. You shouldn't have to give the money to him because then you're going to be under achrayus. Zil bereisha v'yichdav lachis kabalti. What you should do, he says to Rab Safra, go first to Rab Abba and make sure that he writes in the document the word iskabalti. And then that way you'll be able to collect from my father. Cause then that way he'll know that way. My father of Yosef will know that once he gives you the money, then he's potter from Achrayos, and then he'll be more comfortable bringing the money. So again, this is the case. It's not that he doubts that Rab Safra is Rab Abba's Shliach, but there's the problem of Achrayos on the road.
Somebody went and they came back and
told him. So he's telling him, I'm sorry, your document that you brought from Rab Abba is not good enough for us to be able to rely on that we can give you the money and know that we're not going to be on the hook for it again.
So you have to get
another document.
Yeah.
L'soif omalei Rava. Well, so l'soif omalei, afterwards, actually Rava tells him, and l'soif doesn't have to mean that he actually went back and came with another document. It could be as they were continuing to discuss the matter. Omalei, Rava says, actually, I kosev lachnami iskabalti lav plumhu. Actually, even if he writes iskabalti, that really is not going to help. Dilma ad osis shochev Rab Abba. Because the problem is, by the time you return, what's going to happen? You're going to go back to Rab Abba. He'll give you a new document that says you collect the money from Rab Yosef and his iskabalti, and it'll be considered once you receive the money as though I Rab Abba received it. The problem is, says Rava to Rab Safra, the problem is by the time you come back here, shochev Rab Abba, it's possible that Rab Abba might pass away. Rab Abba at this point was old, so he might pass away. So he might pass away at some point, and then his shluchus is bottle. And so the Naflu Zuzi Kami Yasmi, the result is that now the Yisoimim are going to inherit his estate, and his Hiskabalti is not going to be effective. The Yisoimim are going to go demand it. They're going to say, if there was an onus on the way, they're going to say, the Hiskabalti did Rab Abba lav klumu. They're going to say, the fact that our father wrote Hiskabalti doesn't help. The fact is that by the time you presented that document, Rab Abba was no longer living. So therefore, his hiskabalti is not effective anymore. Hiskabalti would mean that I, Rab Abba, am saying as soon as the money reaches Rab Safra, it's considered it reached me. That only works if Rab Abba is still alive.
Yeah, but he doesn't go back. He doesn't travel back. He assumes he got his hand.
No, the point is, Rava is saying, so now, On Sunday you're gonna go to Rav Abba and he's gonna give you a document that says it's Kabbalti. On Monday you're gonna come over here and you're gonna present that document. And if Rav Abba is still alive on Monday, then excellent. It means we give you the money, and it means at that point we're potter from any further achrayus because it's considered that it reached Rav Abba. But what happens if after he gave you the document on Sunday, what happens if Rav Abba passed away? Now, when you come on Monday with a document that says it's Kabbalti, what is Kabbalti? There's nobody to be Makabal because Rav Abba passed away and the Yisraelim are not bound by that is Kabbalti. So if you take the money and you go to bring it back to Rav Abba, not knowing yet, of course, that he passed away, and there was an onus on the way, then the Yisraelim are going to say, wait, we were never paid back. So then you know we're going to need to pay again. We don't want that. So therefore, it's not going to work. Now,
if what he writes is doesn't have any.
The point is that he's writing his Kabbalti, and that's not good enough. You can't. Until he actually receives it, right. Or his shliach receives it, but only when he's alive, right? There was a bit of discussion about that. The Gemara does mention in Gittin that usually we're not choshesh lemissa, at least not in the short term like that. So the Nemuka Yosef points out that look, I mean, we're trying to figure out something that'll be airtight. So therefore, we do have to consider that it may be a remote possibility, but it still exists, and therefore Rava still wants to take that into consideration. Yeah, especially since Rav Abba was old, and then, in fact, Rava himself explains there in Gittin that if the Mishaleach is over 80, then we are Choshesh Lemissa, and so we could say that Rav Abba over here was over 80. Anyway, though, the Yamshel Shlomo, the Maharshal, gives a different answer. When it comes to Isser Beheter, we're not Choshesh Lemissa. The case there in Gittin is involving sending a Shliach to receive a get, or to give a get, but here we're talking about dinim momenus, and you can say that, look, it may be a remote possibility, but there still is a possibility, and I want to be insured against that. Okay, so in short, Rava tells Rav Abba, doesn't really matter whether your document says it's Kabbalti, either way, it's not going to work. So El Omalei ve'Elamai Takanta. So Rav Abba says to Rava, well, then what should I do? How do I collect the money to give to Rav Abba? So Rava tells him Zilnik Nirloch Agav Karka. What you should do is that Rav Abba should be makne you the coin that should be makne to you the money Agav Karka. We learned about in Kedushin about Kinyan Agav that when you coin a Karka along with it you can be coin a Metaltlin. So the same way and we talked about over there the Metaltlin don't necessarily have to be on the actual Karka. So therefore have Rav Abba be makne you some Karka and together with it be makne the money. And therefore, now it's considered your money. And now, when we give it to you, we'll be potter from Achrayos, and it won't matter at that point whether Rav Abba is still alive when we give you the money or not.
The karka has to be where he's received the money from.
No, the karka can be anywhere, as we're going to talk about in a second. And then, the ta'ak, soiv lonis kabalti. Now, the next thing is, then, so he needs to do you a kinyan agav. Then you come and write us out a document that says that once we give you the money, I receive the money. And that way, in other words, and now we're potter from any further achrayos, and then we can give you the money. So that way we've covered all our bases. So that answers the question before. The Gemara was asking, according to Shmuel, where we say, Ein Meshalchen Mos B'diyukni. So the answer would be, we have to do like that. We have to have Kinyan Agav, and we have to have something that says Iskabati. And we have another example, the Gemara says, Ki hodir a papa have a masik tracer alfi zuzi bechoizoi. There was a case where a papa was owed 12,000 zuz by people in Bechozoi. Bechozoi is an area nowadays part of Iran. It's the area of Iran near the Persian Gulf where a lot of the oil wells are. So these guys owed Rav Papa a lot of money. So he was machna that money to Rav Shmuel Ba'aba Agav, the safer of his house. So Rashi gives two explanations. Safer can mean like the word saf in Lashon Kodesh, meaning the threshold, and that's karka, because the threshold's attached to the ground. So he's maknaim the threshold of his house, and together with that, the money. Or the second possibility, Rashi says that safer can mean like a corner of his house. Whatever the case, he's maknaim karka, and together with it, the metalblim. And Ki Osa, and when Rav Shmuel came back with the money, Rav Papa was so happy to see him. Nofak La'ape Ad Tavach. He went out to meet him as far as Tavach, which is the name of a place. This story is also told in Bava Basra. Tosfa, the Rashbam there explains another possibility that Tavach means the middle of the way. So he went all the way halfway from where he lived to half the distance from where he lived to Beit Chazoi to meet up with Rav Shmuel Bar Abba as soon as possible because he was happy to have gotten the money. Figuring that there's such a large amount of money and so difficult to travel and still he got it. So yeah, there is quite a lot of discussion about that. There was quite a lot of discussion about that because the question is that how can you be makna a choiv where the money doesn't necessarily exist now? After all, milva lo hitzah nitna. It's one thing if it was a pikadin or something where the money actually has to still be intact in their hands. You can do that. But here we're talking about a choiv. How can you be makna something that may not exist at that time? So there's a...
Midagav?
No, even kinyan agav. How would that help? So there's a lot of discussion about that. In fact, Tosfos elsewhere discusses that the girsa may not be that have a masik, meaning that he was owed money, but rather have a gabay or something like that, which means, in other words, that he had been maskid this money by them. So then in that case, Bekodin, there's no problem doing Kinyan Agav. And then there's various other possibilities that Tosfos discusses in different places that maybe in fact the Chachamim did make a takana to say that even with a milva, you could do that. You don't necessarily usually be safe to transfer a milva from one person to another. Usually you need what's called maimad shloshtam, that the three of them are standing together. And you say, this milva that you owe me, instead give it to Pliny. But here we're saying that maybe the Chachamim also made it possible to do it through Kinyan Agav. Okay, the point is, in other words, that we have an example of that you use Kinyan Agav in order to be able to collect. So the same way Rava is telling Rav Safra, if you wanted to collect, and we want to be guaranteed against any problems of achrayus on the road, then we have to do it that way, involving that Rav Abba is going to be makni you the money agav with kinyan agav. And by the way, that's the only way to do it. We can't do, for example, chalifin, because the Gemara talks about in Bava Metzia, you can't acquire money with chalifin. You can't use a kinyan chalifin to transfer money from one person to another. Metalplin, yes, but not money. Yeah. Okay. So again, you have Tosfos discusses that the halacha would have to be like Rabbi Yochanan saying that even with a diukni, as long as there are edim, you could send it, and therefore that would mean that this whole discussion that we just said would not be a libid dehilchasa. On the other hand, Shulchan Aruch brings not like that. It brings all these dinim over here that you need kinyan agav and that you have the concern that he might die, etc., and therefore you have this whole thing that we're talking about in order. That's the only valid way to require the shomer or the gazlan or whatever it is to return the money and be guaranteed that he's not going to have to repay it again. Okay, the Mishnah had said nosim la yisakeren b'chola. The Gaonim, by the way, point out another point when it says that Rav Papa went all the way to Tavach in order to meet him. One point is he wanted to preempt that Rav Shmuel Bar Abba is going to come back and actually take possession of the poet of his house that he was makna to him. if Rav Shmuel Bar Abba gets all the way to Rav Papa's hometown, then he's going to actually be able to be machzik in that threshold or in that corner of the house, and then how is Rav Papa going to get it back? So therefore, that's why he wanted to go meet him on the road in order that he can't do that. That way he can get the money from him and say, now you transfer back to me the part of my house that I was makna to you, and that way he has to be willing to, but fine, he's yeah. Okay.
The same way that you worry about that, you could say, I'm not giving it back here.
No, well, okay. No, it's not a matter of trust, but the fact is he could be machzik in it, and then Rapop has to pay him money or something in order to get it back. So like this, he preempts that. Okay. The Mishnah had said nosim la yisakeren b'chola. We had the case in the Mishnah where the gazlan paid the keren, but not the choymish. So we said that einet tzorech leilach achrov. So we said he doesn't have to go travel. He doesn't have to go follow the guy all the way to Modai to return the choymish. It's enough. He was yotze at that point. He still has to pay the choymish eventually, but he's yotze at that point, and he can bring his carbon. So the Gemara says amach choymish mamoinu. Now, the point, though, is the chomesh apparently is considered mamon rather than kapara. If it was kapara, then obviously, if it was just for kapara, then obviously not giving it wouldn't prevent him from bringing the oshem. It must be, in other words, since the Mishnah is saying he doesn't have to follow him, implying, but it is considered a choiv of mamon. It's not just considered a matter of kapara. And therefore, that means, but in mayis, so therefore, the implication is that if he dies before he has a chance to pay the chomesh, mishami le yoshin, then the yoshim are going to have to pay the chomesh. If it was kapara, then we say, ain't kapara le mason. Mason do not need that kind of kapara, therefore, they wouldn't be on the hook to pay the chomesh. But since apparently the Mishnah is implying that the chomesh is considered mamon, then they would be required to pay that like any other choiv of mamon that their father owed. Utnan nami, and in fact we learn. Also, the Mishnah had also said, "Nosin asakeren v'nishba." Actually, a later Mishnah in our paddock says, "Nosin asakeren v'nishba." Oh no, actually, it was in our Mishnah. "Nosin asakeren v'nishba l'chomesh." We said if he paid the keren and then swore falsely that he had paid the chomesh, and now he's ready to do tshuva for that. Then we said, Hari Mosif Chomesh al Chomesh. Then he has to add another Chomesh to the original Chomesh, like we talked about before. You could have, for example, originally he owed, let's say, $50, and he swore falsely about it. So now he's chayav keren. Now he's chayav, let's say, for example, $60, in order that we don't have to deal too much with fractions. So $60, let's say. So now he has to pay keren b'chomesh, which means he has to pay an extra 15, total 75. And now if he pays the 60 and claims that he paid the 15 and swore on it falsely, eventually he's going to have to pay that 15 plus a chomesh of that 15, which is going to be, we still do have to use fractions, whatever. The point is, he's going to have to pay a chomesh on top of that original chomesh. So we see that the chomesh is considered mamon. If it was considered kapara, then that wouldn't be necessary. So we see also al machum shemamonu. We see from that also that the chomesh is mamon. The tanya nami hachi. Furthermore, we learn in a brisa. If a person steals from somebody else and then and swears falsely that he didn't, that he returned it or he didn't steal or whatever, and then he died, Yoshim Mashalman Keren Rechemish, the Yoshim have to pay the Keren and the Chemish, Upturim in Asham. But they're parted from the Asham because again, in Kapara Lameisim. The question is, the Yoshim B'nei Shalom is Chum Shadavu and Havu. Are you telling me then that the Yoshim do have to pay the Chomesh for their father? Alma Chomesh Mamonahu Voy Shalom Yoshin, meaning that we're saying that the Chomesh is considered Mammon and the Yoshin should have to pay. This is in parenthesis. The Marshal takes it out because it seems kind of repetitive. It's basically restating what it said in the previous line. So it could be it was originally different Yosois, which accidentally got merged together, whatever. Anyway, Uramin. The problem is, the Gemara says I have a contradiction on that from a Braisa. The Braisa says, the beginning of the Braisa, it comes, it actually says from Toras Koinim, which is the Medrash Halacha on Vayikra. The Pasuk says, Asher Gozal, the Pasuk says, Beheshev Esegzela Asher Gozal. And from those words, Asher Gozal, we learn that a person has to pay a Chomesh only for his own Gzela, not for his father's Gzela. And then the Braisa continues, Adayin ani Omer, still you would think, only when neither he nor his father swore, then you would say, then the Yoshima potter from the Chomesh. Now, of course, in that case, there really is no Chomesh anyway, but the point is, the Rashba says, fine, but we're saying that there are other cases where you'd be chayv a Chomesh, but you'd say, only in this case, where there's no way the Chomesh is not applicable at all, then you would say that they're not paying the Chomesh. What about if the Yodash swore falsely about it and the father had not, or the other way around, the father had sworn falsely and the Yodash did not, or both of them swore falsely? Minayin, how do we know that in all those cases the son does not pay the Chomesh? Tamad Loimar, Asher Gozal, Vasher Oshak. The Pasuk therefore says that he stole or that he held back. The fact is, the son neither was Gozel nor was Oshik. He's swearing falsely that his father had paid it, but nevertheless, he wasn't the original Gazlan, he wasn't the original Oshik, and therefore he's always potter for paying the Chomesh. So the Braisa is saying that the son never pays the Chomesh, and here we're saying the implication from our Mishnah, and from the implication from two parts of our Mishnah, as well as the Braisa, is that he does pay the Chomesh. when his father stole.
It's just money that he stole.
Doesn't matter. Therefore, they're paying the keren, but they're not paying the chomish. In other words, apparently the chomish is a matter of kapara. And once the gazlan is dead, then in kapara the mason. That's the question, yeah. Amr Nachman, like Kasha, Kansha Hoida, Kansha Le Hoida. The difference would be we're talking about whether the father admitted before he died that he had sworn falsely. So now at that point he becomes chayiv in the chomish. Kan shalo hoida. The second braisa is talking about where he never even admitted about it, and therefore that even if later on the yoshim admit that their father stole, then they still don't have to pay the chomish. The Gemara asks, Eloi hoida ken nami le mishalem. Wait, if the father never admitted to it, then there's no keren to be paid either. How do we even know that the father stole? And the Rashba points out, can't be that there were Eidim, because we're talking about the Chomesh, implies that the whole thing we only know based on his own say-so. There's no Chomesh when there are Eidim, only when he himself is Moida. But if
when you Moida yourself, you don't have to pay him.
No, that when he's Moida himself, when he swore falsely, and now he's Moida, that it was actually a false shvur, and he had in fact stolen, that is where the Torah says he has to pay the Chomesh. But if we're talking about he swore falsely, and we never found out that it was actually false, he was never Moida, then what payment are we talking about anyway? He swore that he didn't steal it. There was no Haidah, so how are we talking about a Karen anyway? And you're going to say, maybe in fact, yes, maybe that is what the Braise is implying, that in that case, the son is not paying anything at all, that it doesn't just mean that he's not paying the chomish, means he's not paying anything at all. No, given that the Tana is trying to find a pasuk to show that he's potter from the chomish, because it says Asher Gozal, and he's not the one who stole, lememra the keren mishalim. The implication is the son would have to pay the keren. So he pays, so we're talking about a case where he pays the keren, so it can't be where the father wasn't moida, has to be where the father was moida. In that case, then, how do we reconcile this last braisa with the Mishnah and the other braisa that says that the son does pay the chomish? V'oy Tanya, furthermore, that same braisa continues, v'adayin ani omer, still you might, without the possibility of telling us, you might think, emos hayom shalom keren al gezel aviv, when is he paying a keren for his father's gzela, v'zmanchen nishba huva aviv? Only when he swore and his father had previously sworn, then he would have to pay. But if only his father had sworn falsely, but not the Yodesh, or the Yodesh but not the father, loy huvelay aviv, or neither the Yodesh nor the father, minayin, how would we know that even then the son has to pay the keren? Tamad loy magzela v'oshek avedo pikadin yesh talmud. Therefore, the pasuk mentions Zela and Oshik, where he held back wages of a worker, and Aveda, where he found a lost object and falsely claimed that he hadn't found it, or that he returned it, and Pikadin, and the Braisa finishes off, Yesh Talmud. Now, what does that mean? The Gemara first explains, what does this word Yesh Talmud mean? And then we're going to get back to explaining how we reconcile the various braises. The point is, the braise though is clearly saying that the braise is clearly saying that the son has to pay a keren regardless. So then it can't be that we're talking about whether the father was moida or not, because again, if he's not moida, then there's no keren to talk about. So what is this yesh Talmud? The Yosef Rav Huna Ka'omala Hoshmaita, Rav Huna was sitting and saying over this braisa, Omale Rabba Bray, so Rabba, the son of Rav Huna, asks, what is that last word? Yesh Talmud Ka'omamar is the word Yesh Talmud, meaning, in other words, that we can learn from the fact that the Torah took the trouble to repeat all, to tell us and repeat all of these cases, Pikodin and Gezel and Oshek and so forth, that we can learn from that the Yodesh is Chayev to pay Keren in all cases. Or does the braisa mean it's logical? They have to be paid. It's logical. In other words, we may not have a pasuk to show it, but we can show logically that the son should have to pay in all those cases. So what was it? What's the word? Yesh Talmud or Yesh Talmud? And Omale, and Ravuna answers, Yesh Talmud, Kamina. It means the braisa is saying Yesh Talmud. There is a way of learning from the pasuk, meaning Omuribuya Dekroy Avri. I'm saying based on the fact that the Torah is Marba, by mentioning all these cases, shows that the son is always responsible to pay the keren. So again, if the son is responsible to pay the keren, that can only be the father was moida afterwards that he had stolen. So fine, we can talk about whether there was a shavua or not, but there has to be at least be a hadar from the father in order to be even talking about these dinim.
So no, if the son alone wants to clear his father's ganim, And he says, yes, my father.
Yeah, but we have to ask, what are we talking about saying that he's required to pay the keren? And then we're talking about whether he is or isn't required to pay the chomesh. Wouldn't that require at least that the father was moida that he stole? Otherwise, how do we know in the first place? Ela, my loy hoida. So we have to explain. When Rab Nachman said he wasn't moida, means loy hoida oviv v'hoida b'noi. Means the father was not moida, but the son is moida, and therefore he's making himself chayiv in the keren. But still, he's potter from chomesh. Well, the question is why? In that case, why? The son himself is swearing that his father paid back, because we're talking about nishba huva ovi. We're talking about a case. One of the cases where the son is potter from chomesh is where the father had sworn that he hadn't stolen it or that he repaid it, and the son also did. And we still say in the braisa that the son is potter from chomesh because it says Asher gozel and he's not the one who stole. So why shouldn't he have to pay a chomesh for his? Why shouldn't he have to pay a chomesh for his own shvur that he himself swore falsely? Ami. So the answer is she'in gzeila kayemis, because we're talking about where the thing that he stole no longer exists. Now later on, we're going to learn in the next parak that when that happens, and we're going to learn at the beginning of the next parak, a gozel machalos bonav, a person steals and gives that food, for example, to his children to eat. Then the children are potter from paying back after their father dies. So there we're talking about over here that the gzela no longer exists. So therefore, so now if when he's kofer, then it's just he's being kofer. So now it's just a shvuas bitui. It's just he swore falsely, but it's not the kind of shvua that would be mechayiv mechomish. That would only be a shvua on mammon, and here you don't have that. Here you don't have that kind of thing because they're potter from paying anyway. So the Gemara asks, "Eve she'ein gzela kayemis after the keren nami lemishalim." Well, then again, he's not chayiv even for the keren. Then. Because again, like we said, gozel machalas bonav, then they're potter to pay, even for keren. Yeah, and the answer is lo tzricha d'ikto achrayus. The answer is where we can be talking about where the gazlan had karka, where the sons inherited it, and now there is achrayus. Now the Mishnah does go on to say over there that if the father left behind karka, then yes, the children do have to pay out of that mipnei kvod avihem, because of the kovod of their father. Because it shouldn't be that he left them zeyla. Marsho actually asks on that so Rashi brings that point that the Chayov Lahasim Nikvoid Abiyim. Marsho actually asks that when we get to that Gemara, when we get to the beginning of the next parak, we're going to talk about another that Yavash Yesh Be'achrayus. There are two ways of explaining it in the Gemara over there. One explanation is it means that it's a Dover Hamasuyam, that there's the actual object, that there's an actual noticeable object that he bequeathed them. It could even be Metaltlin. And that's still considered achrayus. So then, and when the Gemara says over there, a matter of, if we say that it means karka, it's not a matter of kvod avim. It's a matter of there's a shibud on karka. So why is Rashi saying over here when he left them karka? It's because of kvod avim, when that seems to go against how the Gemara explains it over there. And so a couple of achronim talk about the kosei yeshuas, talks about the pnei yeshua, talks about, and they give lumdisha answers that have to do with that the Gemara over here is going that the Gemara over here and Rashi's explanation over here is going according to a hava amina that we have over there, and it's true based on the maskana of the Gemara over there, it would come out something different. Anyway, the point is that so we're talking about there is achronim. Question is still so what if there was a chrayus nachosim milval pei? It's still only a milval pei. There's no shtar for it. Or milval pei and go velemina yoshin velemina lekuchus, and that kind of thing you don't collect from yoshim or from buyers. Now Rashi takes out this whole question and the answer that the Gemara is going to give, because Rashi has several questions on how the Gemara is even asking such a question. First of all, it says over there they have to repay because of kvod avim. So who cares whether they're required to pay or not? They may not be required because of the shibud, but they're required to pay. They're required to pay because of kvod avim. And then Rashi points out a couple of other problems with it as well. So Rashi takes out the whole question and answer over here, and goes directly to the answer that Rav Huna Breder of Yeshua says on the next omen. Tosfos on the other hand, shows how this question and answer can work, and other mafoshim also have it in the Gemara over here. So again, the question is that a milval peh you don't collect from the yoshim, so why would they be having to pay in the first place? So the answer, b'sha'omad badin, because we're talking about where they actually went to Beis Din, and the Gazlan had actually come to Beis Din, and Beis Din had required him to pay, that's already considered a milva b'shtar, and such a thing has to be paid by the Yoshin. Well, then he should have to pay the chomish as well. Because you don't pay a chomish when he's denying a claim that involves shibud of karka. Because you don't, minat Torah, you don't swear on anything involving karka. The Gemara learns it in Masechta Shavuos from Sukkim that the whole concept of shvur only applies to metalklin. So now, when he's swearing falsely that his father didn't steal it, then, and we're talking about the shibud karka, we're saying again that the gzela itself no longer exists. We're only talking about a shibud because his father left him karka. So in effect, he's swearing falsely about a claim involving karka. For that kind of thing, there's no shvur menatorah. So therefore, there's not going to be the kind of thing where because he did such a shvur, therefore he should be chayev, therefore that he should be chayev the chomish for that.
Again,
it's
for the father.
I know this is because the father stole it, right? Rav Amar, Rav gives a different answer. You can be talking about that the gzela did exist, but that bag of money that the father had left, which contains the gzela, was a pikodin that was left in somebody else's hands, and the son didn't know about it. So we don't have to say that the gzela was used up, like we said before. We're asking then, what about though the son swore falsely? Why shouldn't he be chayv chomish for his own shvur? The answer is because he didn't know that this money still exists because it was mufked by somebody else. So now when he swore, d'chi ishtaba, b'kush de'ishtaba. So now when he swore, it was, as far as he knew, a true shvur, d'holai haba yoda, because he didn't know better. As Rashi explains, based on the Gemara in Shavuos, when is a person chayv? When a person can be chayev for shvua, he can be chayev keren b'chomish, etc. He can be chayev b'chomish when he swears the shogeg or b'mezid, but the shogeg would be, for example, he doesn't know he's chayev korban for that, as the Gemara discusses over there. Here, where he actually didn't know the facts, we wouldn't call that a shvua. We wouldn't call that a shvua sheker, and therefore, because he didn't know better, it's called liboy onsoy, like his heart was onus him because he didn't know better, and therefore he wouldn't be chayev b'chomish for such a thing. So that would be the case, and therefore, so the bottom line is that we have a few different ways of reconciling when did the Yoshim pay a chomish, and where our Mishnah was saying that they never pay the chomish. Our Mishnah was implying they do have to pay the chomish because it's mammon. So there are cases where they would have to pay it. Eventually, what we're saying over here is that when the gzela still exists, and when the son had then, and when the father had sworn falsely about it, then the son is paying the chomish. But when not, then in the different cases that we just talked about, then in fact that would be what the Braisa is saying. That in those cases, the son would be potter. The last Braisa from Tertus Kohenim would be saying those are the cases where the son is potter from the chomish. So we're talking about he's potter from the chomish when the we're saying. When the gzela is not around anymore, and there's he's only paying out of karka, so therefore there's only a shibud on karka, and you don't swear on karka, or where he didn't know the actual fact and he wasn't aware that the gzela still exists, and that's why he swore. So in those kinds of cases is where we're saying that he would, those are the kinds of cases where we would be saying that he's potter from, that he's potter from paying the chomish. So that would be another case, right? So the Rambam summarizes it as follows. He says that when he had to pay on his own, when he has to pay machmas ovid because of his father, then he's not paying chomish. So the Rambam summarizes his father stole or was chayev to other people money. The son knows about it, that he actually owes the money. The son was koifer and swore, but then he was moide. Then he pays only the keren because we're talking about when the gzela is not kayim, but if the gzela is still kayim, then he would pay the keren b'chomish. And then you have the various other cases that we find from the Gemara over here. If the father had sworn and been moida, then also the son is paying the chomish. On the other hand, if he wasn't moida and only the yodesh was moida, then he's paying only the keren. In all cases, he's potter from the osham because the osham is definitely kapara, and as we said, ain't kapara lemesim. So therefore, the kapara has to be done only when the person is alive. So the Yodish is never going to do that. But as far as when the Yodish pays the Chomish, it's going to depend on these various factors that we mentioned over here in the Gemara. Yeah.